I'm Sherry Preston. If you have AT&T phone service and it's not working correctly this morning, know that you are not alone. The company says it's working urgently to restore service to customers experiencing wireless service interruptions in several cities today. Alabama's largest hospital pausing its IVF program, at least for now, as doctors look over the state Supreme Court's recent decision on frozen embryos.
The University of Alabama at Birmingham Health System saying in a statement, "We must evaluate the potential that our patients and our physicians could be prosecuted criminally or face punitive damages for following the standard of care for IVF treatments." Because Alabama's high court ruled frozen embryos qualify as people, anyone who discards them, which is a normal part of the IVF process, could now face criminal charges.
ABC's Elizabeth Schulze. President Biden considering executive action at the border after House Republicans failed to bring a bipartisan immigration bill to the floor for a vote. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Republican U.S. Senate candidate Eric Hovde says he opposes abortion except in cases of rape, incest, or when the life of the mother is in danger. The Journal Sentinel reports Hovde's position has evolved since the last time he ran for Senate. In 2012, he told a Green Bay radio station he was totally opposed to abortion. More Wisconsin farmers are taking the government up on incentives to try more sustainable practices. Mike Lavender is with the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. He says that was even before the USDA provided more incentives.
So while this is, of course, accurate and really important to wrap our heads around, there's even newer data that we're getting from Inflation Reduction Act funding demand.
The Inflation Reduction Act provided nearly $20 billion for popular conservation programs. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WISS WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. Residents and businesses have the opportunity to weigh in on the closure of the Main Street Bridge in Oshkosh during an online information public comment and Q&A session on February 29th. The Department of Transportation estimates the project to make structural, mechanical, and electrical improvements could take up to 8 months to complete. For a link to the online meeting or numbers for meeting on the phone, visit WisconsinDOT.gov and search for Main Street Bridge Oshkosh. Low to moderate income homeowners in Wisconsin's Northeast housing region may be eligible for housing programs that provide 0% interest and deferred payment loans for essential home repairs. This is all thanks to a $1.5 million community development block grant announced by Governor Tony Evers yesterday. A total of $16 million in regional CDBG housing awards were made throughout seven regions in Wisconsin. And that's what you need to know. I'm Lisa Hale, WISS WGBW News.
Today, young adults face big questions about their future. How will you make your mark? Do you want to be part of something bigger than yourself? Are you ready to learn new skills and make new friendships? Perhaps you have a dream that you're ready to make real. So, how will you make a mark with your future? As you embark on a journey toward finding these answers, the military can serve as a resource for providing help, information, and opportunities. A public service message from the Department of Defense. To learn more, visit todaysmilitary.com.
Woody back in the clubhouse. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Brewers pitcher Brandon Woodruff back with the team after signing a two-year deal with a third-year option. Woodruff asked after the shoulder surgery, is there any chance he could pitch this season?
I will tell you, like I've told every other team and every other person, I'm following Dr. Meister's orders. He's the doctor who performed my surgery. That's up to him. And I have full trust in Dr. Meister, and I think he's the best in the game. See where I'm at the end of the year, and if it makes sense, maybe. But if not, I'll be ready to go for 25.
Woodruff says several teams came after him in free agency. Once his deal was signed, the Brewers then signed former Yankees and Padres catcher Gary Sanchez to a one-year deal with an option next season. College basketball, Marquette with a dominating win at home, 105-71 over DePaul. Tyler Kolick with 18 assists, setting a new school record, surpassing Tony Miller and Doc Rivers. NBA, the Bucks and the Timberwolves tomorrow night in Minnesota. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
It is going to be another really nice day today. Mostly sunny with a high of 53 this afternoon. Wind will be light out of the west at around 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, 25. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high of 30. Saturday, sunshine with a high of 36. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 35.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
Civic Media's Rich LoCascio. Could you introduce me as a wrestler right now? You could call me like the Punching Bag or the Patsy or something.
From Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Punching Bag, Pete Schwabba.
Now I'd be looking across the ring at my opponent's eyes getting really wide as he got ready to wail on me.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Thursday on Matt and Air On Air, Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us for a public service announcement. Then we talk sports with Journal Sentinel sports guru J.R. Ratcliffe. Hope you'll join us.
Where the fans own the team. This is the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. My good friend and nationally renowned historian, Griot, Reggie Jackson, is back on board, and it's always great to have him here. David, I want to give you a chance to respond to what Reggie said, and then we'll move on.
Thank you again for taking the call. And I guess my question to Reggie, so basically your argument is what the Supreme Court did with the affirmative action, do you believe that that was a racist decision? I guess, long story short.
Listen, I think people misunderstand what affirmative action is about. Affirmative action is something that was developed under the Nixon administration to lead to positive change, affirmatively change, you know, access to, you know, things that people didn't have access to. It's about repair. That's what affirmative action is about, repair. Giving people an opportunity to be in spaces that they wouldn't be in otherwise. It's not about quotas and giving people access to things that they don't deserve. People like to talk about meritocracy. America has never been a meritocracy. That's a myth as well. America is not a meritocracy. When you look at the history of America and you study it in the way that I have, you'll understand that that's a myth, meritocracy. And people always want to attack affirmative action and claim that people who get access to things like college education through affirmative action or jobs or things of that nature don't deserve it. You know, that, you know, they're taking away something that someone else who is more deserving should have. That's not how affirmative action works. I didn't study the Supreme Court case very closely because I really didn't care what they were talking about specifically, because my views on how affirmative action should work differed from the people that filed a lawsuit that led to that Supreme Court case.
Well, I guess there's two things. One, I think it'd be imperative that maybe you take a look at that, number one. And number two, I'm going to read one of your books and just, you know, try to get a better understanding as to where you're coming from.
Let them know what your books are.
You can read my column at the Milwaukee Independent. Go to MilwaukeeIndependent.com. I have a column that I write regularly there. There's a number of articles, dozens and dozens of articles you can read that I've written there. You can also read something I wrote in the book, A Time of Terror, Survivor Story. My mentor, Dr. James Cameron, founder of America's Black Holocaust Museum, survived a lynching in Indiana in 1930, and he wrote a book about that lynching. I wrote the afterword for that book, talking about what he did with his life after surviving that lynching in Indiana. So you can just very freely find those. You can also hear more of my voice. There's a podcast that I did on systemic racism with 88.9 radio station a number of years ago, back in 2021. You can go and check that out and hear hear what I had to say.
Hey, David, thank
racism.
You very much for the call. Let's go to Cassandra in Middleton. Good morning to you, Cassandra. Your thoughts?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I hope you guys are enjoying this lovely weather of almost 50 degrees.
Absolutely.
In late February. You know, I just have to respond to what David said, because conservatives typically want to blame blacks primarily for the reason why they are not receiving some entitlements, such as spots in college admissions or in these advanced programs. And I just like to respond, the Asian community, what is not being said about this particular community is that they focus so much on test scores. And as an educator, I can tell you from firsthand experience, just because someone scores well on the standardized test, it does not mean that they are more intelligent, or they will work harder, or they will be more academically successful than someone who received a lower test score. And the other reason that David really should consider why we really need to have an inclusive educational system where we recognize talent from all races is because of COVID-19. Do you realize that the individual who is praised behind the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine is an African-American female, Kismetia Corbett from North Carolina, who was mentored through many of the programs that the Asian students are demanding they have majority access to. We can't let that happen, or we won't have scientists like Dr. Corbett who comes along and crack that vaccine that we are all benefiting from. So I would say David really does need to get educated.
Cassandra, your thoughts on diversity, equity, and inclusion?
You know what, Earl? I am going to surprise you. I am a firm believer in inclusion and diversity, but I do not like the way some colleges and universities have implemented their DEI programs. I am concerned about any attempt to state that one group is a victim and the other group is, I should say, is inferior to another group. I am concerned about the victimology language.
Cassandra, can we take a step back in American history and ask a very simple question? So people who want to push back against this idea of oppression, you know, one group oppressing another group. Listen, I've traced my family's history. I know the name of the white family that enslaved my family in Mississippi and Virginia. You cannot tell me that enslavement for 246 years in America was not a system of oppression, and that one group was not oppressing the other group. People want to try to claim that, you know, this is playing the victim card. No, we were not playing the victim card. We were the victims of enslavement. We were the victims of Jim Crow segregation. We were the victims of, you know, thousands of anti-black race riots across the country, anti-black lynchings that across the country. And people want to deny that history as if it didn't happen. And you're not going to convince black people that they were not the victims of these things. You're not going to convince black people that they have not been oppressed in this country.
Okay, you know what? I agree with you. We cannot revise history. And that's one of my problems with critics of DEI, and that is they want to ignore history. But as I said before, I am uncomfortable with the idea that that we have not advanced in our society. Yes, there has been oppression, But we
there's still oppression, Cassandra. It's not as if it went away. It didn't magically disappear. It still exists.
And correct. There is still oppression. There is still racism and discrimination. I will not argue with you about that. However, we can agree that there has been progress.
You know, people always want to talk about progress, Cassandra, and Earl mentioned this earlier. Progress from what? You know, why do we have to make progress? What was the problem to begin with? Racism was embedded into the institutions in America, and so we had to move past those issues. We're still fighting that same fight. You know, Earl is still fighting the same battle today that he was fighting back in the 60s in Milwaukee. He's fighting the exact same battles. We've made, you know, people love to talk about progress, but, you know, progress has not led to, you know, the doors of opportunity being open equally for everybody. We still have a long way to go. I get tired of people talking about how much progress we've made, because when I look at data, it doesn't support the fact that we've made so much progress. You know, our schools in this country, you know, which supposedly, you know, segregated schools were supposedly eliminated by the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education decision. State after state pushed back against that. And as I was sharing earlier, the schools in Mississippi weren't officially integrated by the Supreme Court until 1970. And so schools have gone backwards. Schools today are more segregated across the country than they were in the late 1960s. Housing segregation is just as bad today as it was in the late 1960s when we passed the Federal Fair Housing Act. So, you know, people want to talk about progress, and obviously things aren't what they used to be, but that doesn't mean that we've finished the journey. We're working towards things getting better. But when people don't want to acknowledge that, you know, that progress has not necessarily, you know, come down for everybody, then that's a problem, Cassandra.
Cassandra?
Okay, you know what? I agree with everything you said there. But the point is that our battle is different from the one that Earl fought during the Civil Rights Movement.
How is it different?
I see it is different because right now we are looking for economic prosperity and inclusion. Before, the fight was about separation of public spaces. Right now,
I think that you're misconstruing what the Civil Rights Movement was about. You know, if you look at the last years of Dr. King's life, his main effort was in the, you know, Poor People's Campaign. So he was fighting about economic opportunity, primarily because when he traveled to cities in the North like Chicago, Milwaukee, the Black community there told him, like, listen, you're fighting, you know, segregation in the South, but you're not doing anything about, you know, lack of economic opportunities for Black people in the North. And so he shifted his vision to say, yeah, you know what, we need to talk about economic opportunities. So to me, it's still the same battle. He was fighting for economic opportunities in the 60s. We're still fighting for economic opportunities. You know, we're not fighting, you know, legal segregation in the way that we were, but we're still fighting, you know, segregation that exists. We still have very segregated communities. We still have very segregated schools, even more so than we did back in the late 60s in many communities.
Hey, Cassandra, thank you very much for the call, as always. Really appreciate it. You guys, Jack, hang on, Will, and Eric and others, 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. My guest is Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Cassandra.
Listening to the talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app. Or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
I joined the Carpenters Union 15 years ago as an apprentice. got free training, and have been able to advance. Now I'm a superintendent running high-profile projects in Green Bay that change the city skyline. I'm looking for skilled and experienced carpenters. If you want to join my team with great pay, better benefits, and a chance to advance, apply today. Call 920-469-1146 to apply. That's 920-469-1146.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. My guest is Reggie Jackson, a nationally renowned historian, author, writer, and all of those other great things. Let's go to Jack from Racine. Hey, Jack, thank you very much for the call, man. You say what?
Well, first of all, it's been a pleasure to listen to this interesting and important conversation that you all have been having today. But I want to focus specifically on DEI and what I think is happening with DEI. And I'm glad that David asked this question, because everyone I talk to about this thinks that DEI and affirmative action are the same thing. And it's an attack point. You know, DEI has been, you know, since the 70s or before, the 1970s, that's been an issue, hotly debated, and it still is in some quarters. But DEI seems to me totally different. I read through regulations for universities and technical colleges from the state, and the policies related to DEI, and they had nothing to do with affirmative action. What they had to do with was supporting the students that were in the school, every student, to be able to work together in cooperative, diverse situations, providing inclusion and equity for people in the school. It was more of a counseling, a training, and a helping for everybody. For, you know, the white kid who came from out in Wisconsin or the suburbs and never really spent any time with black kids to get to know them, and for black kids who spent time in the city never knew any white kids to get to know them and to work together cooperatively. And we really need that as a society. So I'm concerned when the state legislature stopped funding for DEI in our schools. That's something we need. That's something our businesses need, and we need it to move forward. And so I'm real glad that Reggie Jackson answered David's question the way he did and explained that they're totally different things. And but that's the way it's being sold when the state legislature, Robin Voss, has stopped DEI funding for the universities.
Well, you know, they're doing this on a national scale. Jack, it's not just local. This is an assault and an attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion on a national scale. Hang on, Jack. Hang on. Reggie, you want to
respond to that? Yeah, Jack, can I share one other thing I think is an important part of the conversation about DE&I that people ignore? It's not just about race. It's about, it's about sexual orientation. It's about ethnicity. It's, DE&I space includes the voices of people from a lot of communities. You know, it's about, you know, Jewish voices. It's about Hispanic voices, about Asian American voices. It's about the voices of women. It's about the voices of people that have traditionally been marginalized in America, and having them have their input in spaces where these conversations are taking place. And these efforts to attack DE&I, equating it with things that, you know, are what people call divisive concepts. You know, that's where this the essence of these attacks are coming from. These are things that are making some people feel uncomfortable, because when those voices are heard, people will share things that people may not be comfortable with, may not be familiar with. So when people of color share their stories of their history, those are things that I think many white people in America, you know, don't like to hear, because it goes against the myth of America being this meritocracy, a place of opportunity for all. And it just hasn't been the case from the experience of people of color. And so when those people speak their truth and tell their stories, some people are very, very uncomfortable with that. And so people are pushing back on those things. It's way more complicated than I think people have have, you know, tried to make it seem like it's very simple, but it's very, very complicated.
Jack?
Yeah, that's just making a very important point. And yes, I agree. It includes all types of diversity. And you put it very well. And then I think a real, from an educator's standpoint as opposed to a proponent standpoint, and I hope people are listening. So thank you for your thoughts today. And I think spread the word.
Hey, Jack, thank you very much. Thanks, really, Jack. Really appreciate it. Let's go to my good friend Eric from Tulsa. Hey, good morning to you, Eric. Your thoughts?
Good morning, Mr. Ingham. Good morning, Mr. Jackson. Thank you for taking my call. I got a couple of points. So someone wants to take some notes real quick, and I'll just listen. I believe if I'm correct in remembering, white women have actually benefited over its history from affirmative action than any other demographic.
That's absolutely
the case.
So again,
back to the idea that this is about race.
Yeah.
It's always the focus, but it's far from the truth.
Absolutely. And for anyone, you know, if you look at workforce participation rates that changed when affirmative action came into being, the group that had the greatest increase in workforce participation were white women. So affirmative action for white women, you know, benefited them tremendously, but nobody ever wants to talk about that. So I'm glad that you brought that point up. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to be harmed by this change as well. And it won't be talked about because the focus will still be anti-black racism. And I'd like to say to anyone questioning Black American History Month, you know, we celebrate white American history every day of our lives. We just had a President's Day that celebrated two presidents who were enslavers and one who's well known as a white supremacist, although he's also known as the one who, quote unquote, freed the enslaved people, but did not believe that Black people were equal to white people.
Absolutely.
And like you were talking about before, you know, oftentimes we act as if anti-Black racism and oppression are some kind of natural phenomenon. And that when we talk about progress, we never discuss also that racism has also evolved over this time. And so it's kind of on pace. Recently, I'm sorry, Mr. Jackson, I went to the RID racism ceremony. You received an award and spoke glowingly about your wife. And I was wondering if, you know, after my one more question, you could speak about how she supports your work and the importance of self-care for all of us, which is something you also spoke about.
Yes.
And then really quickly, I wanted to talk about a local thing is the word equity. You know, I believe it's been weaponized, which, you know, across the country and anti-Black racism may be driving it. But adults and children with disabilities, women, migrant communities, and many more people will suffer from this loss of this program, or at least the attempt to take it apart. Recently here in Wauwatosa, equity was actually removed from a DEI program. They removed the word from the program leader's title. And when I asked about it, they acknowledged that it was intentional. And while they continue to work towards equity, the weaponization of the word equity forced them to remove it from the title to reduce blowback.
Right.
And I'd like to close on this. Is that when we talk about the weight, quote unquote, and Martin Luther King talked about the weight, and you discussed it earlier, you know, how there's this weight for what I like to think of as white people basically evolving. You know, I'll quote Scarlett O'Hara when discussing why folks, you know, tirelessly work to maintain our status quo. It's because tomorrow, after all, is another day.
Hey, Eric, man, great stuff as always. And, you know, Reggie, I got to get you to hang on before you get to respond. This is a great conversation. It's a conversation that needs to be had everywhere, on the radio, on television, in homes, in schools. We can't fix any of these things unless we're willing to have a wide open conversation as we're having right now. For that, I thank you and the listeners for chiming in. 844-967-2789. Reggie Jackson, still on the docket, and you. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Up next, news, weather, and sports.
Wasting time.
Hey, everybody, it's Todd Alba. On Thursday, we continue to be live from Hayward, Wisconsin for the American Burkett Fighter. Join us noon to 3.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin will get $24 million from cigarette makers. That's for payments the companies missed between 2005 and 2007 stemming from another legal case. The money is going to the Wisconsin Medical Assistance Trust Fund. People with student loan debt can get their payments cut or even completely forgiven thanks to a Department of Education program. Cora Hume is with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. She says older borrowers can take advantage if they consolidate balances that don't qualify.
The commercially managed federally family education loans, the health and education assistance loans, and Perkins loans. Another loan that sort of is a quasi need for consolidation are Parent Plus loans.
Hume recommends acting sooner rather than later. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WISS WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. For Wisconsin senators who reside in the Green Bay area, the new legislative maps are creating conflicts that have nothing to do with red or blue, but rather where to live. Eric Wimberger, Andre Jacques, and Robert Cowles all live in the new Senate District 30. Wimberger told Gannett that he plans to run in the 30th District under the new maps. Cowles plans to move to Senate District 2, and Jacques will continue to represent Senate District 1 until 2026, but he would need to move inside the new boundary if he seeks re-election. The names of the man killed during a Winnebago County traffic stop and the officer involved are now known. The Wisconsin Department of Justice says North Fond du Lac Police Sergeant Bryce LaLuzorn tried to pull a vehicle driven by 36-year-old Lawrence Drennan over. That led to a chase, and after the vehicle was forced to stop, Drennan called 911 and reported he had a gun. The DOJ says LaLuzorn fired the shot when Drennan exited the vehicle and approached officers. And that's what you need to know. I'm Lisa Hale, WISS WGBW News.
Join me, Lou Regani, as we explore the history of Racine, Kenosha, Wisconsin. For over 30 years, I've told the story of our community, and now I'm excited to be part of Civic Media to continue this journey. So won't you listen in and even be part of the discussion? Tune your radio to 1400 AM or 99.9 FM and 98.1 FM. You can always stream the show live by downloading the Civic Media app.
The Lou Regani Show, Sundays 7 till noon on WRJN.
Compete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Lady Gaga is now Lady Gamer. In 2019, Lady G asked her followers on Twitter, formerly known as Twitter, what Fortnite was. She was surprised to hear back from an expert. Ninja, a gamer who plays Fortnite while millions watch, reached out to her and offered to teach her all things Fortnite. She apparently liked what she heard because now she has a Fortnite character in her image. Is it just me, or is the weirdest part about that story that millions watch someone else play video games? The Writers Guild of America announced their nominees for Best Original Screenplay, and they are Air, Barbie, The Holdovers, May, December, and Past Lives. In the Best Adapted Screenplay category, the nominees include American Fiction, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Oppenheimer. This year, the WGA Awards will be held April 14th. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
It is going to be another really nice day today. Mostly sunny with a high of 53 this afternoon. Wind will be light out of the west at around 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, 25. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high of 30. Saturday, sunshine with a high of 36. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp now 37.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
From I-43 to I-41, this is the Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Just for fun, those days are gone. think of all the friends I've known. But when I dial the telephone, nobody's home.
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. I'm glad that Reggie Jackson has decided to hang on to the end of the show. I thank all of you listeners and all of you callers to what I believe is a very impactful and insightful conversation that we're having with historian Reggie Jackson this morning. And I still maintain it's one of the things, it's the only way out of the issues we have is to have this kind of dialogue in an open and honest manner, and especially over these airways. Let's go to Karina. Good morning to you, Karina. Your thoughts.
Good morning, Earl. Well, you see, I think that you'll get Mr. Jones is absolutely right, because I tell you the fact that those programs didn't exist in 1995, 96, when I went to college in America, and I'm an immigrant, and I did all my grades and all my work, and every time I would go for a scholarship, I would into every box, except they always would tell me that, hey, you're a majority, you don't qualify, just because I'm white. That's it. This is nothing else. So I think it's very important what you're saying. Discrimination happens to many different people, and it doesn't matter what color or religion you are. It's just because of the profiling. And I think that removing those programs, people like me and others fall off the rail. And I really appreciate that you guys talking about it, because people need to understand diversity program is not just for a color of your skin. And thank you.
Hey, Karina, thank you very much for the call, Reggie.
Yeah, Karina, I like to just, I don't know if I'm misconstruing what you said, but listen, when people talk about college scholarship opportunities that are designed for very specific groups of people, a majority of college scholarships, a majority are open to everybody in America. They're not based on race. And a majority of people that get college scholarships are white people by far. It's not even close. So the fact that there are some programs that are designed specifically to help people of color, blacks, Asian Americans, Hispanics, that's not a problem. That's trying to open the door of opportunity for people who can't access some of those other scholarship opportunities. And so for people to think that the fact that, you know, there's a program that's designed to try to increase the number of blacks in college by providing scholarship opportunities for blacks, that's not preventing any white people from going to college. That's simply trying to open a door for more diversity in our colleges.
Let me ask you, Reggie, you know, Cassandra said things are getting better. You hear others say things are getting better. From your educated perspective, with the racial issue in America, are things getting better?
Well, Earl, you know, when people say things are getting better, I always ask them the same question. What things are you talking about specifically that are getting better? Because racism is not getting better. Racism is just as paramount today as it was on the day that I was born in 1965. It's still just as prevalent, still just as harming as it was at that point in time. You know, one thing about any society you look at, things are constantly changing. You know, the only constant in life is change. So things are different than they used to be, but that doesn't mean that things are so much better, that things have improved. Because when you look at, you know, the data related to blacks as compared to whites in America, many of the things that people talked about that were huge challenges back in the late 60s are still huge challenges today. For instance, when you look at home ownership rates across the country, the home ownership rates for blacks were very low due to policies and practices that intensely discriminated against them for decades. In the late 60s, we passed Federal Fair Housing Act, but we haven't seen any progress, or not much progress, in home ownership rates. The black home ownership rate nationwide is still only about 44%. It was 41% when the Federal Fair Housing Act was passed. So we haven't really made any. I mean, that's like a rounding error from 41% to 44%.
The schools are still segregated.
Yeah, the schools are more segregated today than they were when Brown versus Board of Education passed. And, you know, when you look at consistently over the decades.
Black
when you
businesses.
Look at, black businesses. When you look at unemployment rate, the black unemployment rate is typically twice the white unemployment rate across
even
multiple
today.
Years, decades. It's been that way for a very long period of time. So when we talk about progress, what are we talking about? You know, I think there's some very limited things that have changed, and they haven't changed because people have, you know, opened their hearts up to say, let's give people more opportunities. They've changed because people have fought, Earl. You know, the Jim Crow laws that were, you know, the things that the civil rights movement were fighting against didn't go away because white people decided, oh, you know, this is unfair. Let's get rid of this. It's because black people said these things are unfair. We want to get rid of these.
So what do you say? What do you say to people who say, wait a minute, they're black mayors, they're black, you know, in police chiefs, they're black county supervisors, they're more black elected officials than have ever been in the history of the nation? What are you talking about?
That's all fine and dandy, but the conditions of a majority of blacks hasn't changed significantly as a result of that. You know, we have a black elected mayor of Milwaukee.
We had a black president.
Right. We have a black county executive in Milwaukee County. But what real changes have happened to the community overall?
None.
You know,
zero.
You and I spend a lot of time out in the community, you know, working with people, talking with people, and people haven't seen, you know, this overwhelming amount of change because we have some black elected officials. I think that people overestimate the power that elected officials have on change happening in the community. You know, they can change certain things, obviously, but they don't change. They don't make racism go away. I don't care how many black mayors you have. That doesn't make racism go away. It doesn't make the marginalization of black people go away because you have black elected officials.
You know, Reggie, historically, if you look at Milwaukee, black police chief, black sheriff, you know, black chairman, not at the county council, you know, black mayor, black county executive, you know, blacks in leadership in a lot of different areas. But generally, blacks wind up in leadership in those positions after the cities themselves have become basically almost bankrupt.
Yeah, you know, we disinvest in those communities for decade after decade. And then all of a sudden, these people are left to try to clean up the mess. You know, that's why the black community in Milwaukee struggles, because it's been disinvested in for decades. We've taken money away from big cities over the last 60, 70 years. We've literally taken money from big cities. And we spent money building the infrastructure of the suburbs, building freeways to get people to the suburbs, building the system that allows people to have access to homes in the suburbs. Where did that money come from? People don't realize that money was taken from big cities to build suburbs. So you're allocating resources away from the communities that are most in need and giving them to communities that don't need it nearly as much.
Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, and so, you know, we have to understand that, you know, we haven't fixed most of the problems of America just because we have some black elected officials. You know, that doesn't fix all of the ills that we have.
Well,
you know,
we had a black president of the United States, and somehow people believed that he was going to wave a magic wand and all things were going to be fine. We saw that wasn't the case. Let's go to Cindy from Appleton. Good morning to you, Cindy. Thank you very much for the call. Your thoughts?
Good morning. Well, I don't know if you have time. I don't know if this is a place for this today, but a lot of people have, especially white people, have misconceptions about Malcolm X and the Black Panthers. I wish you'd take some time over the course of the next few days to tell us and brief us about what they did for the community of Chicago and people of color. So I really wish people would get educated on both the Black Panthers and Malcolm X, because they were not evil people like everyone thought.
So we're going to have Reggie back, and Reggie will be able to delve into it. You're a very wise woman because you know you've read the history and you know the truth and not what was taught by many people. But thank you very much. I wish we had time for Reggie to address it. Let's go. But we'll make sure he does the next time he's here, which is next week. Tom from L.A., go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'd really recommend that everybody go to YouTube and put in Jane Elliott into your browser and watch her stuff. She's a white woman, a white teacher from years ago, and it will show you how privileged we are as a white community. Also, myself, who owns, I think I've told you, Earl, the gayandlesbianpages.com, I always say in the end, I write a thing on my book, in my book, and it says, I'd like to dedicate this edition to all the LGBTQ plus people who have and will continue to come out of the closet on a daily basis to show everyone that they do not need to fear us. This is what has moved our community forward in LGBTQ plus civil rights. To the straight community, get to know someone in our community. Equality is a measure for which we should all strive. We must never stay silent, and we must be involved in the things that matter to all of us. Get to know somebody and do not fear us. And that's what I would say to anybody out there that does not understand. You know, like I said, check out Jane Elliott, and please, just it'll change your world.
Hey Tom,
the way you look at things.
Hey Tom, that was well said. Thank you very much for the call, Reggie.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. You know, there's some important work that Jane Elliott has done over the course of her career, and I think a very kind of interesting way of looking at, you know, the privilege that white people have that they don't realize they have. So I think there's some value in looking at that. And, you know, people talk about equality. I don't think equality is my goal. My goal isn't equality, because equality is giving everybody the same thing. Well, some people need different things. I'm more towards, you know, what equity is about, giving people the resources that they need to overcome some of the barriers that are in front of them. But I don't want to even do that. I don't want to just work in the equity space. I want to work in the justice space. That's when you eliminate the barriers that are there, that provide, you know, people access to all the things that they need. That's my goal.
You know, Reggie, I hear people say, you know, we keep blaming America for the racism and discrimination that still exists in this nation. And that is not just America where racism and discrimination exists.
Yeah, but it's done better here than anywhere else, Earl.
Repeat that.
It's done better here than anywhere else.
You mean racism and discrimination?
Yeah, racism in the form that it takes place in America is a much more advanced form of racism than you find in other countries. I've traveled, you know, I was in the Navy,
right,
Earl, so I've traveled the world. I've been to other countries. I know what it's like in other countries. I know people from, you know, a variety of countries around the world, and I can tell people that, listen, you know, as I've talked to people about my desire to, you know, leave the United States and live in some other country because I'm so tired of the racism here, people always say the same thing, Earl. They say, well, you know, racism is everywhere. I'm like, yeah, but it won't be the same as the racism in America. You know, it won't be the same because the history of racism has embedded it into the institutions of America. It's embedded it into the minds of so many people here that is something that we're struggling against. And I always say that the worst thing about fighting racism, and, you know, this is what I do for a living, the worst thing is that racism always fights back. It doesn't just say, oh, okay, well, we're just going to give up and we're going to treat people fairly. People that, you know, believe in racism, people that, you know, are proponents of racist ideas, they want to maintain the status quo. They don't want to see America change. They want to make sure that they still have all the things that they've, you know, felt entitled to.
844-967-2789 is the number. My guess is the indomitable Reggie Jackson.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Most of us can agree we should have the freedom to make our own medical decisions. Politicians should have no role at all. But not California mega millionaire Eric Hovde. Hovde said,
I am totally opposed to abortion, and I'm 100% pro-life. And he supported overturning Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights. Hovde's been supported by Wisconsin Right to Life, an extreme anti-abortion group that supports banning abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, and threatens doctors and nurses with criminal charges for providing abortion care. With views like that, Hovde could be a crucial vote in favor of a national abortion ban, letting politicians decide what's right for women. Call Eric Hovde at his California office at 714-730-4444. Tell him his position on abortion is dangerous for Wisconsin women. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show. Join us at 844-967-2789. Reggie Jackson is still here. Let's go right to the phone lines and Al from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Al. Your thoughts?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay. Well, I just called to say hello to my old friend Reggie, and
thanks,
I got to put you on my roster. Now you've become a shadow warrior. That's what they call me. People that are always working to help other people, but don't nobody ever see you.
Yeah,
and
we
ain't looking
connect,
for no
Al.
Recognition.
We should connect.
Yes, sir.
Get caught up.
It's been good to hear from you, and it's a good show this morning.
Thank you.
Hey, Al, it's only a good show this morning.
Yes, sir.
Oh, all right.
This morning. I heard Dreamweaver. I thought I was going to hear Bessie Smith or... you know, some good old blues or whatever.
Oh, man. Dreamweaver. All right, wait. Welcome. We'll talk later, Al. Thank you very much for the call. So, Reggie, let me ask you, as we start to wrap this up, since I lived through the 60s and was a grown man in the early 70s, and lived through the 60s as a young man, there were opportunities that racism and discrimination couldn't prevent me from living a middle-class lifestyle because we could work in factories and there were jobs and opportunities and racism couldn't stop us from living the American dream. Today, those jobs aren't there. And so young people today, there's nobody to fight that battle for them. What do you perceive as the future of young black people and others who are being discriminated against, the future, their future in this country?
Well, you know, I think all of our futures are combined together, Earl. You know, we as a nation, people have to understand that the nation is changing demographically. White people aren't having children at the rate that they used to.
Zero population growth.
And so when you look at the data, look at all of the kids that are in public schools in the United States. More than half of those kids are children of color. And more than half of all babies under the age of 1 year are babies of color, Earl. So that's the future of America, whether people like it or not, whether people think that that's a good thing or not. And so what I challenge people to do is that if we don't figure out a way to make the schools work better for children of color, particularly black and brown kids, then we're going to be in trouble on the international stage as a country. We're not going to be able to compete. because the schools have not been effective for black kids ever, and they haven't been effective for Hispanic kids for the most part. But those are the kids that are going to be a majority of kids moving forward. We have to realize that if we don't make things better for those marginalized students, black and brown students, then America is going to have a very difficult time competing on the international stage. And, you know, manufacturing jobs, which were, you know, the heart of the economy in Milwaukee for years, you know, those jobs have disappeared, Earl. They're disappearing all over the world. Manufacturing jobs are being replaced, you know, not just by artificial intelligence and robots, but, you know, people coming up with processes to do things more efficiently.
Right.
And so manufacturing jobs that brought black people to Milwaukee, there was no reason for black people to come to Milwaukee other than those good jobs. That's what drove the black, you know, increase in population in Milwaukee. There were less than 9,000 black people in Milwaukee in 1940, but by 1970, it was over 105,000. And they came because of those jobs, Earl.
You know, Reggie, it's so good to have you and your eloquence and your compassion in your way of teaching, which is unalarming to many, but in fact, truthful. And always on point is why it's always so good to have you on the line. And I'm sure people in this audience enjoyed having this conversation, because where else is the conversation going to be had, right? And so if the only way to fix these things is to have the conversation, right? And it can't be had out of malice.
Absolutely. You know, I think the key is conversations, Earl. People need to be much more ready to have conversations with people, you know, from groups that they don't spend time around. You know, get to know people from other groups and hear their perspectives. Understand why they see the world in the way that they see it. You know, all of our lived experiences dictate who we are and how we interact with the world around us. And I think that, you know, as I've traveled around the state of Wisconsin, I've heard from a lot of white people that want to hear, you know, the black perspective on things. Or the Native American perspective or Asian American, you know, they want to hear the perspective of people that they don't spend time around. And the way to do that is to spend some time learning about, you know, people and what they say about the world around them. You know, read books, listen to podcasts about people of color. If you want to hear their perspective, you want to know why they see the world in the way they do. You know, I've found it very interesting for me, Earl, and I say this to people all the time, and it's kind of shocking to people, but, you know, I've studied African-American history. I've studied Native American history. I've studied, you know, Asian American history. I've studied, you know, the history of Hispanics in the United States. I've studied the history of different white ethnic groups. You know, I've studied Jewish history in the United States. And what I found is that the common thread in all of those histories is that when you look back at the history at any particular period of time of any of those groups, white people are there. So I came up with this idea that I call parallel journeys in history, Earl, where you can look at any period of time in American history and look at all the people that occupy that space at that time, and you can see how people interact with each other, and you can learn about why things ended up the way they did by how people interacted with each other.
So, Reggie, we have to leave it there until next Thursday when you return. Thank you, as always. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin. Up next, Matinair on the Air, Jane Matinair and Greg Bosch. See you later.
From the home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
This is Dom from the Devil's Advocates. Tune in on Thursday. Our pal, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, going to join us, and we're going to get into the Alexander Smirnoff issue.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating, without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder, metamorphosis, the loss of who you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics.
Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Thousands of AT&T cell phone customers dealing with little or even no service today. There's no exact reason why it's happening.